Imperium.
Hello and welcome to Ashes of the Imperium. My name is Dan, and as ever, I'm joined by the wonderful Max. How are you, Max?
I'm really good, Dan. How are you?
I'm living the dream, as ever. Thank you very much. And today we are talking all about the brand new Tau Codex. And we are very, very grateful to Games Workshop for sending us a preview copy of the new sort of Tau Battle Force. Slightly weirdly named Tau Battle Force, when actually it's a kind of group Battle Force, isn't it?
All part of the Empire, Dan.
All part of the Empire. Yeah, that's true. I would have quite liked to have seen a Tau Battle Force released alongside it.
So you could kind of pick your
flavour.
Pick what you fancy, yeah.
That
could have been cool. But the new Kroot models are pretty exciting, so I'm not too disappointed that they've really made the most of it and whacked them all in one box.
Then you've got your Vanguard boxes anyway, haven't you?
Yeah, exactly. Combat Patrol.
There's been a number of Battle Forces in the past. Combat Patrol. Vanguard's the Age Signal ones, aren't they? and there's been a number of Tau kind of Christmas Battle Forces in the past as well, which I'm sure people can pick up off eBay if they're that kind
of time. Well, I've got the book in front of me and it's beautiful.
It's gorgeous, isn't it? Yeah.
Loving the artwork and everything. It's been really exciting to flick through it. It's there's nothing quite like new Codex to reinvigorate some hobby energy for a stuttering project, right?
Yeah, and Tau are, you know, they're kind of one of your armies, aren't they? They're something that you're
I've had a on again, off again relationship with Tau. I had pretty large force in 8th edition that was built around Shadow Sun, triple Riptide, 60 Fire Warriors, the broadside battle suits. So the kind of very strong 8th edition lists that I took to a couple of tournaments and was some, you know, was good fun, but then got a bit bored of that because it was very, very one-dimensional army. You know, it was stand still, ping the Markalites, pop the strap, shoot, and that was about it, really. So stopped enjoying that and then got rid of that army, moved it on. Haven't touched them for 9th edition, and then about a year ago I got the Tau itch again, and I picked up some models and started working on them, doing a very similar paint scheme to my original force, which was a bit of a mistake, I'll be honest. It wasn't fueling the painting passion, you know. It was kind of like, oh, I've already painted 6,000 points of Tau in this scheme. Why am I doing this again? So I don't know why I did it. I think because I had some Death Guard green spray left. So I was like,
Didn't you move from your Raptors to the Tau?
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, so you had a bunch of Death Guard green. So if I may, like, I think Death Guard green as a colour.
Yeah, it's not very Tau-y,
I don't think it did the army any favours.
Nah, it doesn't.
Because it's quite a drab colour.
Yeah, yeah. So
it's olive drab, isn't it? But like, it is quite a kind of dull colour. And I think, you know, I painted the Alpha Legion Horus Heresy tank, the Kratos, recently.
Which looks amazing.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I mean, I can't take much credit. I just got
followed the teacher's instructions.
Yeah, for sure. But definitely, like, shout out to Rob Medwell, who sort of med as miniatures on Instagram and YouTube and does the Heresy Hammer podcast. I went to a little 2-day kind of painting tuition thing for a Kratos tank from the Horus Heresy game, and like the quality of teaching was phenomenal. He's a former teacher anyway, so much like yourself, Max. Actually,
there we go. We're everywhere.
We're everywhere. Yeah, this bounders. But yeah, he's got a really good teaching style. He's obviously a phenomenal painter. He's now a full-time professional miniature painter, commission painter. So he's obviously got he's got all the gear, all the ideas, and the ability to convey that information. And I think that's sometimes something that isn't necessarily the cherry on the cake. You know, you've got people that are really good at a thing, but they're not very, very good at explaining the thing.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
But yeah, massive shout out to Rob, and I think he's putting on he's putting on another course this summer, and I don't know whether there's still tickets available, but head over to like Medders Miniatures if you want to. It's in the south of England in Berkshire, if you fancy 2 days worth of painting tuition. But anyway, the point there I was making was that bright and vibrant colours on the tabletop are, like, for sure are my jam. Like, and I think painting your Tau, as cool as that, you know, it is to have them kind of like stealthy and, you know,
modern contemporary army look. Yeah,
I just don't think it does the I don't think it does the kind of the miniatures a favour.
No, I'm with you. So I've got about 1,100, 1,200 points of Tau built and primed at the moment, Death Guard Green, with a few units finished. What I'm going to do is just respray them. I might strip them. It's quite a light prime. I might strip the ones that are painted because, you know, I don't want to gum up the details. I don't know. I'll make a decision. But I'm going to respray them red and do a Farsight scheme with them. I just think I'll have a lot more fun with that. It will be equally fast, if not a little bit faster, and will look pretty cool, I hope. So yeah, this new codex has reinvigorated my hobby mojo for my Tau. I was actually this morning, just while we were waiting to record, I was tidying them up a bit and clipping a few bits off and sorting some weapon options out and that kind of thing. So yeah, I'm excited to get them going again, to be honest.
Awesome. I think maybe an airbrushed rebase, you know, rather than a rattle can, because then you're not doing two rattle can. Regardless, I know you say it's like a light, you know, a light coat. You know, still rattle can coats are decently thick.
Gloopy. Well, I'd have to buy an airbrush.
Well, maybe bring them over and we can have a little airbrush.
That could be fun.
I'll bring my airbrush up to you when I come visit.
Yeah.
But yes. So I suppose I've never. I don't think I've ever had a Tau army. I've bought a Tau army before, for sure, a couple of times, but I've never really played. I don't think I've ever played any games. It's the kind of thing that I've always been kind of curious about. I suppose, like, I could literally say this about any faction in Warhammer. I'm like, oh, I've always wanted to do an idea, and sometimes I bought some, and then I never did it and sold it later. But I think the kind of, for me, what's really cool about Tau is that kind of, like, military esque kind of like mechanized force.
I was gonna ask you, like, they're obviously quite a different aesthetic and vibe to the, you know, they're not gothic, they're not particularly grimdark. It's a very clean aesthetic, and, you know, the lore, and it's there's a very different feel to everything else. I think with the Votann range coming, that's got a similar feel to it, I guess, for want of a better word. It has a, you know, very utilitarian, clean, high-tech kind of look to it. How do you feel about them as a part of the kind of wider 40k offering? Do you think they sit well, or do they stand out a bit to you? Or
I think yes to both. I think they fit well, but I think they stand out, and I think they fit well because they stand out. Without wanting to get too kind of conceptual, I think the universe can't be, you know, servo skulls of murdered orphans, you know, drained in the blood of martyrs all the time. You know, you've got orcs that are sort of a bit comic reliefy, and Nurgle's definitely kind of, there are definitely some sort of Nurgly aspects in there, kind of like the sassy Nurgling and things like that. You've got space to have variety in the kind of the vibe of the universe, and I think Tau bring that variety, because Eldari definitely have a similar kind of clean aesthetic, but they are the kind of like ancient and noble, you know, dying race elves that we know from, you know, Middle Earth. And
yeah, it's very fantasy, isn't it?
Yeah, very much so.
Whereas Tau is pure sci-fi.
It is. It is. Yeah. It's kind of like pure kind of like optimistic sci-fi rather than the kind of like pessimistic drudgery of the 41st millennium. And I think it works. Like, you know, I know that Tau players get a bad rap on the internet, don't they? You know, you can make a meme out of most things these days, but Tau players definitely get a bit of a bad rap. But I don't know. I think I like it. Like, you know, they say that there's no good guys in 40Ks, but are Tau the good guys of 40K? Like,
Well, arguable, isn't it? They're very, very gunboat diplomacy. The emergence of the ethereals that's still a bit of a mystery, really, isn't it?
Like, oh yeah, they've definitely got a kind of sinister undertones here and there. You know, basically like, hey, we want you to be part of our gang. Mm-hmm. Oh, you don't want to be part of our gang? Well, in that case, we're going to destroy you. Yeah, they've definitely got that kind of warlike nature to them, and the ethereals, like pheromone based control, like, is the whole Tau empire an empire of slaves?
Yeah It's a really interesting question, isn't it?
Isn't it just so there is, I think, underneath the kind of clean sci-fi kind of anime Gundam aesthetic, you do have some grim dark kind of vibes within the lore, within the race, and I think that works. But yeah, so overall, like the army, like the vibe, more kind of towards the hammerheads, you know, devilfish, you know, squads of 10, like a mechanized guard army almost, but, you know, bluefish dudes instead of humans.
There are some really interesting looking combinations that you could run with that theme. I think looking at the units in this book and some of the new detachments, you could have a lot of fun with a Fisher Fury list, I think.
Yeah,
and Hammerheads are still crazy fun, like the what is it, two shots, strength, ridiculous, insane damage, devastating wounds. You know, you just like, you're rolling those wound rolls and you're just like praying for sixes, and I just love that kind of, like, you know, that when you're rolling a few dice and there's so much on it, like, oh, if I get that dev wound on this wound roll, then boom, that tank is gone. They're a lot of fun to use, I think.
Yeah, and I think the gamble of that, of like, you know, you've got so much power in one model, I like that. That's definitely my kind mm-hmm. of unit.
Mm-hmm. Just so yeah, Tau Curious then, interesting.
Tau Curious, yeah, and they've been, you know, I still think of them as a new army, but they came out back in third edition, didn't they?
A long time ago now.
Were you playing 40k back in 2001?
Oh goodness, no, I wasn't. I was painting Space Marines, but I wasn't playing games. I was you know, just collecting and painting, really.
Oh yeah, I mean, weren't we all of that age? But yeah, no, so I still think of them as new, and I don't, the Gundam kind of the suits things, that's the thing that's never really captured me. It's never
they've got a slightly cleaner look than Gundam, I guess, you know, but it's distinct,
yeah,
enough,
true, but I just mean like the overall, the suit thing, you know. I suppose, yeah. Now Tau's, I guess, got three kind of strands to it now. Used to, yeah, have two. It's kind of, you've got the suit army, you've got like the mechanized military esque thing, you know, blue Astra Militarum, and then mm-hmm. you've got crew. You can kind of do a whole army of crew,
mm-hmm.
And that's really cool. And we'll kind of get onto the crew in a minute, but but yeah, so the kind of the suit side of Tau's never really been that interesting to me.
Yeah, Riptides, it looks like, unfortunately, are still paying for their sins of previous editions. They're not great in 10th edition, but they have been insanely powerful for a couple of editions before that, haven't they? So I think that's fair enough. My poor old Custodes bikes are paying the same price, I feel, but it is what it is.
Absolutely. So I suppose to kind of touch on the narrative of the army overall, like we talked about, you know, whether they're the good guys or not, they've obviously got this thing called the Greater Good. I'm sure listeners will be aware, but you know, I think it is a really interesting race to have in 40k, of one where it is a kind of message of acceptance in such a kind of xenophobic, aggressive universe where, you know, the Imperium of Man will literally, you know, exterminate the alien or anyone that looks slightly different. To have a race that is so accepting, yes, they back that up with the kind of firecast if you say no. But I think that's a cool difference to have.
I really like it. These double page narrative spreads that we're so fond of in the new books, I think they're doing so well. There's a really cool one with the diplomat, isn't there, speaking to an imperial governor, and with her is a Kroot aide, but also a human aide, and she gets him to kind of like pull his arm up, and he's still got his Aquila tattoo, and he's still got his you know, his imperial pendant, and she sort of makes the point that we don't ask anybody to renounce their faiths, and you know, join us, and everything will be great. And then the imperial governor's sort of like, nah, not today, mate. And then she sort of leaves the room thinking, well, all right then, firecast, here we come.
On to plan B.
Yeah, it's so cool.
Send in the Fisher Fury. Yeah, I did like that. And I liked how it kind of made the point how, obviously, the models that we use are the Firecast, you know, they are the warriors, we are playing Tau when diplomacy has failed.
Yeah.
You can't play with the kind of watercast diplomats. It'd be a fairly boring game.
In the Crusade rules, there's some cool stuff with diplomatic things. I haven't had a chance to look into it fully, but it is something that they're playing around with in the kind of Crusade rules, at least. But, you know, yeah, it's obviously very difficult to incorporate into games of 40k, you know, like match play. Unless 40k ever did something a bit like the A Song of Ice and Fire minigame. I don't know if you've seen that. You have like political characters on the side, and they can provide certain buffs to your actual fighting units in the ground, and there's like intrigues and things you can play on the sideboard, which are quite cool. But I don't think 40k will introduce anything like that anytime soon.
No, it's a cool, it's not a concept I'm familiar with. I haven't actually ever really looked into the game, apart from, you know, when you do the usual rewatch Game of Thrones all the way through, and you think, right, I'm gonna buy a load of these miniatures and paint stuff, and you're like, no, Dan, you don't need to do that, that's yet another system you won't play. But yeah, no, I like how they kind of, they showed how the diplomat goes in, and they've specifically got their human to be introduced. Their kind of human aide is introduced by his old human name, even though they say he's renounced it. Mm-hmm. And as you say, he shows all his kind of imperial tattoos and like his Aquila necklace, even though he doesn't normally wear them. And he's wearing imperial clothes, and he's not wearing his like little kind of Anakin Skywalker Padawan topknot thing that the Tau have. And so it just goes to show how well thought out these approaches are.
Yeah, it's cool, isn't it? The Tau diplomat, she's looking at the murals, isn't she? And she's noticing all the details, and like she says, you know, I already know everything I need to know about this society to convince them or you know, otherwise. And it's really clever. Really cool element that doesn't get a lot of attention in other factions, I don't think, to the same extent.
No. I think they're quite an empathetic race, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd say so. What if you were an Imperial governor and, you know, on the fringes, struggling, enemies beset you from every direction and the tower rocked up, what do you think you'd do? Would you join the greater good, or...?
Difficult, isn't it? Because you've been brought up, you know, there's my answer, isn't it? It's like, well, I'm not so sure about that, buddy. But you've been brought up to have such a mindset of to fear the alien,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, and I think, and again, in this little two pages are brilliant. The little two pages does kind of, they've got a crew aide with them, and the governor's like, we know what the crew are like. you might kind of look vaguely humanoid in, you know, you stand on 2 feet and you talk, you know, gothic. Yes, you got a blue face, but whatever. But then the crew are proper aliens. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They're not kind of, yes, they're anthropomorphic in a way, but like they're bird, cannibal, vicious monsters, aren't they?
Oh yeah, really, really gory, really brutal, really visceral. You know, the crew get quite a lot of attention in this new book, obviously. And there's a description of an ambush of a unit of Astra Militarum in their tower oxes getting ambushed by the crew, and it's very, very cool. You know, they're stalking through the long grass, like the raptors in Jurassic Park.
No, in the Lost World, don't go to the long grass.
Yeah, leaping.
What a scene!
Oh, amazing! Leaping off their mounts and chucking grenades through the hatches, and Indiana Jones style jumping back on the horses, and then, you know, once the battle is won, they just chow down. It's pretty gross, but really cool.
Awesome. Yeah, and it's so cool to see that the whole range of models. We're we've split the box that Games Workshop sent us, and I've kind of started to have a look at some of the sprues, and they are really, really cool models.
Yeah, it's a good upgrade, isn't it? It's a solid upgrade without going crazy, which GW are really good at the moment with the new Terminators, the new Tyranid units, the replacement Tyranid units, the going back a few years to the upgraded Chaos Legionaries. They just, you know, really get that balance right between a refresh and an improvement and just not going nuts with it. And it's, they're really cool models. Can't wait to get them painted up. They look like they should paint up fairly quick as well, you know, just with I'll probably do a bit of a slap chop thing on them, and like a grey primer, and then some.
Well, ironically, Death Guard Green would be an excellent spell. Wow. Having said that, I don't recommend it for the normal Tau. I think it actually would quite work well.
Yeah, the Crute carnivores are a little bit naked. I reckon if they'd had, they look a bit like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, you know? I reckon if they'd had just a bit more gubbins on them in terms of clothing or something, or some webbing, or even just some like loincloths, I think that would have improved the overall look for them for me a little bit. But the new riders and, oh gosh, the new hero units, the new leader units, they're so, so good. The one I really like, he's got his kind of like a break barrel firearm, like at ease over his arm, and the barrel's broken. He looks like he's just been on a grouse shoot or something. But there's some really cool new models in there for sure.
Yeah, I know what you mean about the kind of lack of armor. And I think that that's a slight change to the old models, because the old models did have kind of chest armor, didn't they?
Yeah, well, the new kill team that was released, the Farstalkers, they are all webbed up. You know, they've got lots of bits and bobs, and they look quite martial. But the new Kroot Carnivores are a lot less adorned than that.
Accessorized.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
But I think that works. That works, doesn't it? Like, if you're a kill team and you're operating on a Space Hulk, as these guys were, you know, you're going to have your cloaks, and you're going to be slightly more, I suppose, like, socialized with humans. Whereas I think that, you know, the Kroot Carnivores being so unadorned is actually quite a cool way to kind of highlight that they are just animals, or highlights their animalistic nature rather than that they're just animals.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. I still like them. I'm still really looking forward to painting them up. And you can actually take that Farstalker unit. There's a data sheet for them in the Codex, and they look pretty cool. But yeah, they've got some good rules, I think.
And if people are fans of Kroot, then of course we did a Kroot episode with Iron Beak Mercenaries, where we talked all about, like, the conversions that he did and the various kind of the Kroot community in the kind of hobby diaspora, who I'm sure are absolutely really looking forward to getting these new units on the table. But I think it was episode 92. So if you fancy a Kroot specific episode, and I might reach out to Andrew and see whether he wants to come back on and do a Kroot specific episode of the new units and stuff.
That'd be really fun. We should have it. Yeah, a Kroot update, I think.
A Kroot date.
Yes.
No, that sounds different. That's very different. Kroot date. Yeah.
don't go for a meal date, a dinner date. That's not what you want. Yeah.
let's go for dinner. Oh, where are we going? It's going to be you know. Right. Okay, so we've got the kind of background set. We're kind of there. That they've appeared in a couple of games as well. You know, there was Fire Warrior. Dawn of War, Dark Crusade as well. So they've been kind of, they're fairly established, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. I think they have a for as much hate as they get and as much ribbing as they can get, there is a very loyal fan base to them too, I think.
Excellent. Right, talking of loyal fans of the greater good, Max, as you, I would consider you one of, do you want to take us through kind of how the army feels for you as someone who has played the army in the past and is now looking at these new rules and thinking, like, what's your initial impressions?
Okay, so like I mentioned, I've played a very specific style of Tau in previous editions. It's not really possible now with the army rules as they are and the units that were so strong back then. If I had my old army, I would have to completely, like, rethink it, to be honest. Like, it wouldn't be viable. So there's been a couple of changes from the Index to the Codex that are quite surprising, I think may make some people a bit upset. And there's also something that hasn't changed that will probably make the opponents of Tau armies quite upset, but the actual owners of Tau armies are quite pleased. So the big thing in Index that really stood out was that Breachers had a native ballistic skill of 3+, compared to basically almost every other Tau unit that had or has a ballistic skill of 4+. And what that means is, of course, if you spot a unit and your Breachers are shooting into them, then they benefit from that +1 ballistic skill for the army rule. And they are hitting on 2+, which is really, really powerful when you consider the amount of shots they get, their strength and their AP, and then you combine it up with rules for re-rolling wounds. It's a really, really powerful combo. I mean, obviously, they're very, very squishy, toughness 3, 4-up save units. You know, they will die with some concerted firepower, but keeping them safe in those devilfish, popping them out, which you can do with a devilfish, you know, charge it up. It has a rule that lets you disembark after advancing, and then, you know, blam away with those pulse blasters. It was a really powerful combo, and that has stayed in the Codex. I think there was some discussion of it being an Index typo, but it was obviously not corrected for a couple of balance updates, and you know, there's been opportunities for them to do it. And the fact that it's still present in the Codex, I think, suggests that it's something that GW want to keep in. You know, it's not a mistake. You know, some of the bat rep channels have been playing it as a mistake, but it's there to stay. I'm not quite sure what it's supposed to represent, like that the Breachers are super effective close quarters, or if it's just a balancing thing that they've decided, yeah, all right, let's give them this and see how it goes. But I'm not sure why you would take not take them in a Tau army at the moment. They just seem like a really viable option. Loads of shots, high strength, high AP, gonna hit. It's a really powerful combo.
So here's a question then. If you're running a kind of Fisher Fury style army, can you see a place for Fire Warriors, like a strike team? Obviously, Breaches are also Fire Warriors. Can you see a place in the army for Strike Team Fire Warriors rather than Breach Team Fire Warriors?
Strike teams are cool. Like, I love the unit. I think it looks... A unit lined up and the sculpts, with their rifles all pointing out, and they look really like a firing line. It's very cool. They are obviously have a really good range, 30 inches, and their rule is suppression. So a unit that is hit by them is -1 to shoot, which is really good. So you could have a few units dotted around the back, I think, and you could specifically target your opponent's big DACA units that are going to potentially do a lot of damage to your squishy breaches, and just use them as a bit of a kind of a debuffing unit to try and keep your breaches in the game for a bit longer, I guess. And obviously, they can sit in backfield objectives, and you could use them as action monkeys and that kind of thing to do some cleanses or scans and that kind of thing. So yeah, I think they still have a place, but it's just points that you can't put into breaches, I guess, if you took them. But
and breaches are only 120 versus strike teams at 100.
Yeah, they're not expensive. Yeah, they're not expensive at all. Devilfish are cheap as well, so you could really load up on them. Let's just have a look. Do breaches have battle line keyword? Because that might be an important consideration. They do. Yeah, they've got battle line. So again, you could really load up on them. You're not limited to three. You could take up to six. I mean, I'm not sure you should, but you could take up to six squads of these if you really wanted.
Six squads is fairly
it might be a bit overkill. Yeah, it might be too many eggs in your breacher basket. Yeah.
So let's you've mentioned there before about how there's a way to get +1 ballistic skill, and I think you said spotted or guided and observer. So let's talk about guided, observer, and spotted. So this is the for the greater good rule, and is this different from the index at all?
No, it's the same. It's similarly poorly written. It's one of the most confusingly written rules in any book. But what they have done is they've put a nice diagram in, so that helps. There's a nice diagram to explain everything here. But
I'm glad it's not just me. I also was a bit like
it's not. It's very difficult to pass, isn't it?
Yeah, you have to read it like a couple of times
mm-hmm.
to kind of really make sense of it.
Yeah,
it's simple, And once I've written it out, I understand it. Basically. You pick a, it's really simple, pause. There's three units involved. One's guided, and one's the observer, and one's spotted. You pick the unit you want to shoot with, that unit is going to be guided. That is the unit that's going to shoot. And that is the unit that's going to use the for the greater good rule. You then support that with another friendly unit, and that unit is the observer. Both the guided unit and the observer unit have to be able to see the target. The target then becomes the spotted unit. So it's a little triangle between these three units. And the guided unit gets +1 ballistic skill, and if the observer has marker light, you also get ignores cover.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if they target anyone else that isn't the spotted unit, they're also -1 ballistic skill, obviously.
That's right.
Now, the interesting, as someone who doesn't play Tau and hasn't really looked at the Tau index before, I was like, oh, right, where's the rule that says the observer unit can't shoot that turn? Mm-hmm. And there isn't one. I thought you must be like, in order to get such a powerful buff, surely you must have to sacrifice that unit's shooting. And the only thing you sacrifice is the unit who's the observer can still shoot and shoot that turn. They just can't use the for the greater good rule.
Yeah, they don't get the benefit, basically. They can't be a guided unit.
Can't be both guided and observing in the same turn.
Yeah, that's right. Although there are rules in some of the detachments that allow you to overcome that. So, for example, in the Kaoyon detachment, which is the kind of basic one we got with Index, the coordinate to engage stratagem allows the observer unit to also benefit from the +1 ballistic skill for the unit that they spotted. So you can overcome it with some command points if you want to, but...
Yeah, but I think that it's a fairly powerful rule, isn't it?
It's really cool. I really like it. And, of course, some units are better at being observers than others. Pathfinder teams can observe twice, which is quite good. So you can, you know, you can really kind of leverage those to get the most out of the buffs for other units. And stealth suits have a really nice rule where if they observe a unit, then I believe it is, just let me check it. So yeah, stealth suits rule forward observers. Each time this unit is an observer unit, until the end of that phase, a ranged attack made by a model in the guided unit against the spotted unit can reroll a hit roll of one and reroll a wound roll of one. So anything spotted by a stealth suit unit is going to have reroll ones to hit and wound against it, which is really cool.
Yeah, I like it. Very cool. Very cool indeed. So, what else has changed, Max? You said that there's going to be a rule. So that was the rule that people who are playing Tau would be happy with, but the opponents might not be happy with. Mm-hmm. What's the rule that opponents, the Tau people might be sad about?
Okay, so big changes to Crisis teams. In the index, they are just one data sheet, Crisis Battle Suits. You can take them in units of up to six. So they can go in three suit units or six suit units. You can load them up with all the weapons as well, so they can take up to three weapons. You can give them two shield drones each, so they can be six wounds each as well, because that's how shield drones work in the new edition. And so obviously you could take, you know, three big blobs of six of those, attach leaders to them. You get some really good, buffs that you can put on them. It's kind of concentrating the benefits of observed for the greater good units as well. But all of that has gone in the codex now. So the changes are that they can only be taken in units of three. So that's the maximum unit size now.
Interesting.
So no more big blobs of six. And the second change is that they've also split them out into three separate data sheets. So this is a bit of a throwback to earlier editions. We have Crisis Sunforge Battlesuits, Crisis Fireknife Battlesuits, and Crisis Starscythe Battlesuits. So there's three separate data sheets, maximum three unit, three suits in the unit, and also the maximum number of ranged weapons that they can take now is two rather than three. Alongside all of these different changes is a reduction in points. So they are cheaper. The Sunforge battle suits are the fusion blaster ones. So their base equipment, well, the only equipment they can have is two fusion blasters, but they also have a 4-up invuln save. And their special rule now is you can reroll the wound roll and the damage roll against monster and vehicle units.
Oh, that's cool. So it's like, we know you're going to be jumping in close to shoot them with these kind of melter guns. Mm-hmm. Therefore, we're going to give you a 4-up invulnerable.
Yeah. And you can reroll those wounds and damage against monsters and vehicles, which that's is good. Cool. And they're the most expensive. They are 165 points, I believe. Or maybe 160. Let me double check that.
Sunforge are 160.
Yeah, so they're 160. Yes, that's right. Then we have Fireknife battle suits.
These are 165.
Yeah, they're the most expensive. They are equipped with, as standard, a plasma rifle and a missile pod. And if you wanted, you could take two missile pods or two plasma rifles. So you can swap one for the other, if you like. Their special rule is each time they make a ranged attack, you can reroll a hit roll of one. So we've just got a native reroll. And if that attack targets a unit that is at its starting strength, you can reroll the hit roll instead, which is interesting. The plasma rifles are really good kind of elite killers, strength 8, minus 3, 3 damage. You know, my custodies aren't going to like that very much. And in a unit of 3, if you took all plasma rifles, you're obviously getting 6 shots at strength 8, minus 3, 3 damage, which is decent. You know, rerolling hits against a fully full strength unit. So an interesting change. And then the final Crisis Battlesuit data sheet is the Star Scythes. And these are the kind of DACA ones, essentially.
They've got 140 points each.
Yeah, so these are the cheap ones. Yeah, so their standard unit equipment is a burst cannon and a flamer. And you can obviously swap. So you could take two flamers or you could take two burst cannons. And their special rule is each time a model in this unit makes a ranged attack, excluding against monsters or vehicles, you improve the armor penetration characteristic of that attack by one. And they also have battle suit support systems so they can shoot and fall back, which is quite cool. And I should notice as well that the Fire Knives have weapon support systems. So each time a model in this unit makes a ranged attack, you can ignore the modifiers. So every one of these new data sheets has got one of the sort of Tau Tech options baked in. So the Sunforge gets shield generators, Fire Knives get weapon support systems, Star Scythes get battle suit support systems. But big changes to the way that Crisis Suits operate and the data sheets, which I've not made my mind up about it yet. I think some people are going to be upset that they can't take the big blobs of six anymore, and you can load them up with fewer weapons, which is obviously a massive change. But the points drop is nice. It's an interesting move. I'll be interested to see what the kind of Tau community make of it, to be honest.
Yeah, I think they've definitely kind of gone through a very iterative process on Crisis Suits, haven't they? You know, there was definitely the kind of build a bear workshop vibe from previous editions where you kind of take a Crisis Suit and you can tool it up in so many different ways.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what we're seeing from 10th is slightly less choice, but I see that as a good thing. It's kind of like, you know, if you want to take Catachans, they're going to have Flamers. If you want to take Crisis Suits, you're going to have these three things. And it does reduce options, for sure. And maybe I'm just being slightly more blasé about it because I'm not a Tau player. But I think, you know, having those kind of set roles, they can focus the rules based on those roles. And you've just got three options and that's it. You know, I think sort of the refining the number of choices for an army that's got a lot of choices, I think that's good.
And hey, look, they're three separate data sheets now. So if you wanted, you could take 27 Crisis Suits if you really wanted to, because you could have three of each. But again, that might be, you could have 9 Sunforge, 9 Fire Knife, and 9 Star Scythe. But that's a lot of Crisis Suits, isn't it? And you can still give them 2 Shield Drones. So you can still absolutely, buff each one of them up to 6 wounds each. So a unit of 3 has got 18 wounds at toughness 5 with a 3-up save. So they're quite survivable. You could also give them gun drones or marker drones if you wanted. But I think the shield drone is the obvious choice there.
I've just run some numbers, and 3 of each Crisis Battlesuit datasheet is 1,395 points.
Is that right?
Yeah. So you've still got 605 points to spend on other things.
That's not bad, is it? Good lord. I might have to buy some more Crisis Suits.
There you go. Stick a Farsight in there, a Cold Star Commander, and an Enforcer Commander, and that's 1,785.
Blimey. That's good value, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's a lot of Crisis Suits on the table.
That's a lot of suits, yeah. And if that's your thing, that's cool.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we've only got 4 detachments in this book.
Yeah, that's a bit of a shame.
Compared to, you know, we've
I
seen...
Six. I would be happy, or I would like each codex to have 6 detachments in it.
That's what we saw with the Tyranids, isn't it? 6, I believe.
We saw 7 with Space Marines, yeah. 6 with Tyranids. Was it 6 with Necrons as well?
Mm, I think it was. Around there.
And then, obviously, the Dark Angels books just come out as well, and I think we only had 3?
Yeah.
That's a supplement. And to be fair, the Dark Angels can also take all 7 of the other Space Marine ones as well.
Yeah, so they've got plenty of choice, yeah. Yeah, I think this might be I'm expecting when my Custodes Codex comes that will have 4 as well. I'd be surprised if we saw 6 detachments for the Custodes too.
I'm inclined to agree, but the problem is of those 4, one of them is the Kroot Hunting Pack.
Yeah.
And so if you're not into Kroot, you've only got 3 choices.
Mm-hmm.
And the same for when your Custodes Dex drops, you know it's going to be 3 Custodes ones and 1 Sister of Silence one, I think. Mm-hmm. And if you want to run a pure Custodes force, suddenly you've only got 75% detachment open to you.
Mm, yeah, yeah.
That's just a slightly cynical view, but I don't know. I quite like, I think 6 is a good number of detachments to have.
I think so too. They could have done a few more. I think they could have squeezed some more out of this. Because we've got the Kalyon detachment, which is the index one that we've seen. So it's the kind of, patient hunter, sit back and shoot from distance style of play. In the 3rd battle round onwards, your models get sustained hits 1 or sustained hits 2 if they're targeting their spotted unit, which is a lot of fun, right? That's potential for a lot of shots.
It is quite good. But also, how much of your army is left on turn three?
Yep, that's the trouble, isn't it? Yeah,
that is the trouble. If only there was a detachment that allowed you to go all in turns one, two, and three instead.
So exactly. So Monkar, the killing blow, which, you know, I like the link to the lore here, you know, the two styles of war for the Tau. Monkar is during the first, second, and third battle rounds, ranged weapons equipped by the Tau Empire have the lethal hits ability, and while a unit is guided, they also have the assault ability. So this would fit really well with your breaches in their devilfish, you know, because they're not going to be around after turn three. So really make the most of those while they're still there. We have the Retaliation Cadre, which is the kind of battle suit detachment, and that detachment rule is bonded heroes. So every Tau Empire battle suit unit, each time it makes a ranged attack within 12 inches, improve the strength characteristic of that attack by 1, and if it is within 6 inches, improve the armor penetration characteristic of that attack by 1 as well. So get your battle suit units up and in their face. And you benefit from there. And then the final one is the Kroot Hunting Pack. So that's what you were talking about, Dan. There's only really three that benefit Tau, you know, kind of mainline units. And then this one is purely focused on Kroot, really. They get two rules. They get Hunter's Instincts, which gives them adding 1 to the hit roll, and misses for any attack, ranged or melee, if the target is below its starting strength, and if it is below half of its starting strength, you can add 1 to the wound roll as well, which is cool. I really like that. You know, they kind of like, they smell the blood. And then Skirmish Fighters gives every Kroot model in your army a 6-up invuln save against melee attacks, and a 5-up invuln save against range attacks. So it just makes them a bit more survivable. So there's an interesting spread of rules. You know, it's supporting different kinds of playstyle. But yeah, it would have been fun to see a little bit more variety in there, I think. We used to have rules for Sasea, you know, when the rules were attached to septs, you know, like in previous editions.
Yeah, as in like your chapter tactics type thing.
Yeah, it was Borkan, the experimental one as well. There was rules around like experimental weaponry. I think they could have done something, you know, flavored around that, for example. There's some more stuff they could have done, but the detachments themselves, each one of them are interesting, and I could see myself having a lot of fun playing with each one of those, which I guess is the point, right? I can kind of, I'll be able to kind of pick and choose and try some different stuff out, and I'm not particularly locked into anyone's style, and there's enough distinction between them that I think I won't get bored playing them, which is good.
Yeah, I think the advantage, again, I keep going on about this, but the advantage of not linking rules to chapter tactics is that you can paint them in whatever way you like. And for someone like me, who's coming to Tau as like, hey, I like the model vibe rather than specifically the lore, I can be like, I'm going to paint these however I want. And I'm not going to like lock myself out of some cool rules because I paint them blue instead of red.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite changes in 10th edition. But it just would have been nice if there's a few more detachments in this book.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Commander Longstrike is missing.
Yes, I believe he is. There's only now 2 named characters in the Codex, so Shadow Sun and Farsight. And yeah, Longstrike, I believe, unless he's tucked away at the back with the Hammerheads.
I didn't see him, and he's not on the Hammerhead data sheet either. There's not like a kind of, you know, if you take 3 Hammerheads in your army, one of them can be
or something. Yeah, he's gone. Yeah, Longstrike is gone, which is a shame. He was a cool model. Oh, you know, a cool concept, like a tank ace.
Yeah.
So that's a shame that he's gone.
So we kind of talked about the detachments kind of offline, and Max has decided to do a kind of crisis suits flavored one, and I've decided to do a kind of militia-esque one. We did talk about the crew a little bit, but I think what would be good is perhaps if we can get our resident crew expert back on the airwaves, it would be cool to do a dedicated crew episode, a crew-tisode, if you will, and then we can kind of deep dive into the new rules, because you know, we wanted to give an overview overall, and then maybe a dedicated crew episode if people are available.
Yeah, that'd be really good. So I just started putting 1,000 points together using the Retaliation Carder, which is the battle suit focused detachment. And I'm not going. You know, I just built around a concept for this one. I wasn't going like particularly strong list or anything. So what I've imagined is a stealth team kind of unit that's, you know, moving through ahead of the main battle force, and they've been tasked with a, you know, seek and destroy vehicle mission. So what I've got is leading up the force, I've got 2 Cold Star battle suits. And again, these are relatively unchanged. You can load them up with a variety of different weapon options. You can only take 1 cyclic ion blaster. So gone are the days where Enforcer commanders or Cold Star commanders could be loaded up with 4 cyclic ion blasters, which was very, very strong. But they can still take up to 3 ranged weapons. So you could give them triple fusion blaster if you wanted, which is really, really good. They have an ability that gives the unit that they're attached to a movement characteristic of 12, and it gives the ranged weapons equipped by that unit the assault ability as well. So they really enhance mobility of the unit that we're attached to. So I've got 2 Cold Star commanders, I've got 3 stealth team units at 75 points each, and then I've got 3 Crisis Sunforge teams to drop in and unleash their fusion on the unsuspecting vehicles. So I'm imagining these stealth teams kind of moving through the ruins, you know, locating and then dialing in, and the Sunforge teams drop down from the manta and unleash, and a couple of cool enhancements as well. I've given one of the Cold Star commanders the Puretide Engram chip, which allows me to...
Oh, a classic.
Yeah. So in previous editions, it used to be, you know, roll a dice and on a 5-up, you get your CP back. But now it is, once per turn, you can target the bearer's unit with a stratagem, even if it's been targeted by a stratagem this phase. So again, that will limit it to battle tactic stratagems. So what that means is, you know, you can give them a reroll, or the battle tactic stratagem in the detachment is the Arrokkan protocol. And what that does is, in your shooting phase, it allows you to give the weapons in that unit sustained hits if they're attacking a unit with 6 or more models, or sustained hits 2 if they're attacking 11 or more models. So you can imagine that on something, you know, like the twin burst cannon crisis suits. That's a lot of shots and the potential
for sure.
So a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. And then the other enhancement that I've given is the Star Flare Ignition System, and you put that on a battleseat unit, so on my Cold Star, and at the end of the opponent's turn, if the bearer's unit is not within engagement range, can remove that unit from the battlefield and place it into strategic reserves.
So okay, they can, cool.
they can like shoot back up into the sky and then deep strike down again. And some really good Drats in this detachment as well. Some of my favorites, 2 of my favorites, are the Shortened Blade, which is a 2 CP stratagem. It targets 1 Tau Empire battle unit from your army that's arriving from Deep Strike, and you can set that unit up 3 inches away rather than 9 inches away from any enemy models. So you can drop your crisis teams right into that 6-inch range so that they're getting +1 strength and +1 armor penetration as well. And, you know, obviously really cool on the burst cannons and the plasma guns and that kind of thing, you know, which don't have as high an AP as the fusion guns. But even taking a fusion gun from -4 to -5, you know, that's burning straight through a Redemptor Dreadnought's armor. Then it's not even getting a save. So really, really cool. And also good for light movement as well. You know, often you want to reach a zone for a tactical reason rather than just, you know, just I want to be there to shoot. So the fact that you can get around some of those deep strike denial shenanigans of your opponent is really good. And then my other, I think this is my favorite stratagem in the codex, is the Torch Star Gambit. And this happens in your shooting phase. 1 Tau Empire battle unit from your army that can fly, whose attacks have been resolved. If your unit is not within engagement range of 1 or more units, it can make a normal move. If it does, you cannot declare a charge that turn. So jump, shoot, jump is back. So you can move out from behind cover, shoot with your crisis team, and then pick them up and drop them back into cover, which is really, really cool.
That does sound cool. Nice, like lots of like utility plays there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Lots of little buffs and sneaky little movement things you can do. There's another one, Grav Inhibitor Field, which happens during your opponent's charge phase, and it forces the charging unit to take a battle shock test, and they roll 1d6 for each model in the enemy unit, and for each six, they suffer a mortal wound, which could, you know, kind of soften them up a bit before they make it into charge, which would be quite cool.
And I think the ability, that redeploy ability you mentioned as well, is going to be really useful.
Yeah, yeah, I really like this. I really like this detachment. I've got 9 crisis suits built at the moment. I'm going to look to get a few more and then see what I can have a play around with this detachment. I think I could have a lot of fun with it.
Yeah, I think it's a quite an interesting. You've got an interesting amount of variety that you can get from that detachment as well. You don't have to kind of go the direction you did.
No, because it's battle suit. Yeah,
are quite kind of not generic. Obviously, it's battle suit themed, but battle suit as a keyword is quite expansive, isn't it?
Yeah, it applies to the Ghost Keel. It applies to Riptides and Broadsides. So yeah, there's a lot of different things that can be affected by the rules in this one.
And that's the same for me, because I kind of picked Montcalm, the killing blow, and the rules are useful for the models that I've taken, but also it's such a generic detachment that it could be useful for any number of different armies.
So what have you gone for in terms of units then?
So I'll just I'll go for rules first, shall I? Mm. And then to kind of add the context to the decision behind the rules. And actually, having said that, there wasn't necessarily a huge amount of like tactical thought. I was kind of like, right, what army do I want to theoretically play with? And this isn't probably an army I'm going to buy or you know play with or whatever. But I just kind of like in my head, what did I want the army to look like? And then here's how the rules would benefit here. And I think I looked at the rules first to be like, I have an idea of the style of army I want. So let's have a look at the rules, which rules work for that style, and then kind of fine tune the army from there.
So
the killing blow detachment rule: during the first, second, and third battle rounds, ranged weapons equipped by Tau Empire units, models in fact, from your army, have the lethal hits ability. Whilst the unit is a guided unit, its ranged weapons have the assault ability as well.
Oh, that's really nice. So even things like broadsides, you could get those moving, get those out, you know, hide them first turn and then pop them out with an advance, and as long as you've got a unit spotting, then you can still shoot with them, and it's happening straight away, first, second, third, so lethal. Yeah, really cool. It's like you were saying, it there is a very obvious play in this, but it will apply to lots of different things too, so opportunities to be clever with it.
And so the enhancements are things like your, you know, one of them, you can make the killing blow detachment apply to the unit that the character is leading for the fourth round. So rather than 1, 2, and 3, it's 1, 2, 3, and 4. You can select up to two tower units within 6 inches of the bearer that don't have scouts ability until the end of the battle. All models in that selected unit have the scouts 6-inch ability. Strategic Conqueror, you've got at the start of the first battle round, before the first step begins, select one objective marker on the battlefield. When a friendly tower model is within range of that objective and the bearer is on the battlefield, add one to that friendly model's objective control characteristic. And that's really useful when you're kind of like, you know, you've got a unit of 10, they've got a unit of 10. You don't necessarily need to kill them or engage them in combat. You can just be like, right, I'm just going to move on to that objective and just
be present. And just deny by that. Yeah, that's really good.
Whilst also pointing my guns elsewhere, you know. And then the last enhancement is coordinated exploitation. Whilst the bearer is leading a unit, each time the unit is an observer unit until the end of the phase, ranged weapons equipped by models in their guided unit have the sustained hits 1 ability whilst targeting their spotted unit. So not only are you getting lethal hits.
That might be my favourite.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it? Imagine that on like a bunch of breaches or something.
Mm-hmm. So you could give it to, someone like Darkstrider, leading up a unit of Pathfinders.
Yeah.
And then you could benefit from that twice, because Pathfinders can observe twice. And like anything that gives sustained hits, I'm a fan of. Sustained hits might be my favorite rule in 10th edition. It's just so satisfying. You know, you roll all those dice and then you're looking at, counting up the sixes and like, all those extra hits. I love that. I love that moment in games.
And just for clarity, if anyone's not tracking, sustained hits is when you roll a 6 to hit, you generate an extra number of hits based off the number of sustained hits you have. So if your sustained hits 1, every single time you roll a 6, you add one more dice in there. That's the number of extra hits you get.
Yeah, it's a really fun mechanic.
Yeah, very cool. So I actually kind of went a bit OTT on this and wrote a 2,000 point list.
Oh, no, go for it, yeah.
Because I've kind of trimmed it down to a 1,000 point version, but I just think I prefer the 2,000 point version better.
2,000 points is what I play every week.
Absolutely.
We do a 1,000 point list for this, don't we? So we can like talk around the rules a bit and stuff. But yeah, no. So tell me what you got. I'm excited.
So obviously I started off with 4 units of Breaches and Devilfish.
Amazing.
And kind of spoilers, I didn't finish up with 4 units of Breaches in Devilfish. But that's kind of, I was like, right, I'm going to have 4 punchy units that can do that. And I also noted that the Pathfinders in a Devilfish and Breaches in a Devilfish are the same points. So Breaches and Pathfinders are 120 mm-hmm. and Devilfish are 100. So I thought, right, rather than have 4 Breaches, I'll have 2 Breaches and 2 Pathfinders. And then in a similar kind of discussion to what we were having earlier, I thought, okay, maybe some Fire Warriors at back. So I thought, well, I'll do 2 of those. But the only reason I put Fire Warriors in is because I wanted some Farsight marksmen, you know, the kind of sniper drone dudes. Just they're so cool when they've got precision. So
yeah.
You can kind of snipe out things like special weapons and kind of sergeants and, you know, things like that, like enabling units or special units or special models rather within units. You can just kind of chip them out. I don't think you're going to like slay the warlord on turn 1 with a couple of Farsights, but you can certainly kind of, you know, do whatever you need to do to take out the model that's got the kind of, I don't know, widget that makes you can't infiltrate them. Yeah. Whatever. You know what I mean, right?
I do, yeah. Awesome.
So I had 10 breaches, 10 Pathfinders, all in Devilfish, and then I added a pair of Farsights, and then I was like, right, okay, what I'll do is I'll add some Fire Warriors to accompany the Farsights, because they're just models on their own in the backfield.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to need some support, so I'll get some Fire Warriors, and they can do that kind of pinning thing, that you know, the kind of debuff thing that you were talking about there. And then, as you can see, I've kind of got two Fire Warriors, 2 Breaches, 2 Pathfinders, 2 Farsights. And I thought, why not? Let's just go 2 Hammerheads, 2 Skyrays.
That's a lot of fun.
That's a lot of fun, isn't it? Now, Hammerheads are really cool, as we discussed. Their kind of overcharged iron cannon is, you know, 60 inches. That's the kind of like the short stubby plasma cannon on top. D6 plus 3 attacks, 4s to hit. Obviously, you realistically you're talking 3s to hit because you'll be spotting them, or you'll be supporting them. Strength 8, AP 2, damage 3. Now that is cool, but like if you're taking a hammer and taking an iron cannon, like I think you really need to look yourself in the mirror and ask yourself whether you are truly a legend amongst tower players or not. Because the reason you're taking a hammerhead is to have a railgun, right?
Oh, absolutely.
It's heavy, devastating wounds, 72-inch range, 1 shot, fine. Again, BS4, let's say that's BS3 for the sake of it. Strength 20, AP5. D6 plus 6.
Oh, it's so
up to 12 damage.
I love it so much. So in in my Imperial Fist, one of my favorite new units I've been playing with recently is the Gladiator Lancer, which is insane for its points in terms of killing vehicles. And that's got a really good, the Lancer Destroyer is really good stats. But strength 20 minus 5, minimum 7 damage. It's just so much fun, isn't it?
It is. I love a Vanquisher battle cannon, a railgun, you know, like a single shot, high. Like, I love that kind of the gamble, the fun of like, right, if it hits, and I'm probably not going to hit, but, you know, if it hits, it's going to be devastating. And I love that. You might be thinking, well, you know, BS4, fine, you might not make that BS3 with for the greater good, but you're still only BS3, 1 shot. However, Armor Hunter, each time this model makes an attack that targets a monster or vehicle, you plus 1. So you're hitting on 2s if you're guided against a monster or vehicle.
Well, in fact, because it's a heavy gun, if you're stood still, then that would take the ballistic skill to 3. And then if you were targeting a vehicle or a monster, that would take it to 2. So you don't even have to be spotted to benefit from a 2+ ballistic skill with this thing. So long as you've stood still and you're targeting a monster or a vehicle, you're going to be hitting on 2s, which is really nice.
That's a good point. Core rules heavy. Weapons with heavy in their profile known as heavy weapons. Each time an attack is made with such a weapon, if the attacking model's unit remained stationary this turn, add 1 to the hit roll. I completely forgot about that.
There you go. So you can move and shoot on 2s so long as it's being spotted, or you can stay still and shoot on 2s because of its Armor Hunter rule.
Yeah, like that. That's very cool. Still, 2 up is, you know, you can still roll a 1, but if only there was a targeting array, which allowed you to re-roll 1 hit or 1 wound roll.
You're not missing.
You're not missing, right?
You're incredibly unlucky. I think you are.
What you'll do is you'll roll a one to start, and you'll re-roll it, and you'll get a two, and you think, great, I've hit. And then you'll roll a one to wound or something stupid like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, so two railguns, I think, in a list would be cool.
Yeah, you'd be very unlucky to miss. And at strength 20 with a reroll baked in, you would be very unlucky to not wound as well. So yeah, they would be a lot of fun. I might have to buy some hammerheads done.
Oh, I'll do it for sure. the Sky Rays, you know, you could do three hammerheads. But it kind of slightly ruined my kind of twos thing. They've got the Seeker missile rack, which is twin linked, three attacks, fours to hit, strength 14, AP minus 2, damage D6 plus 1.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is, you know, is fairly decent.
Yeah, I think that's good. What would you do in terms of leaders for this list?
So, I'm just looking at twin linked rule because it's changed, hasn't it? Weapons with twin links, each time an attack is made with such a weapon, you can reroll that attack's wound roll. Amazing. Yeah. So the Sky Ray gunship's got a velocity tracker and a targeting array. So the targeting array allows you to reroll one hit or one wound roll anyway. You're not going to do that with the wounds because you're rerolling wounds with twin linked.
Yeah.
So it means it's not heavy. So your BS4 normally, let's say BS3 when guided. That means you can use one of your three shots. You're probably going to miss with at least one. So you can reuse your reroll for that. And then the velocity tracker is if you target a unit that can fly, you can reroll the hit roll anyway.
Oh, nice. That's really good.
So I think being clever with what you're shooting, you can really get the maximum uses out of these kind of native rerolls and the buffed rerolls.
I think the Sky Rays, they used to be kind of like limited number of shots per game as well, didn't they? But that's not the case anymore. It's just every round you get three shots, which is really good.
Yeah, ooh, I think it had four missiles, didn't it? So you could only shoot it four times or something.
Yeah,
or something like that. Which I just dislike it.
No, I don't like that as a rule. But I'm liking the Sky Ray. I've not had much of a look at those, to be honest. But
lots of things have fly these days. Mm. You know, Space Marine tanks.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
your gladiator hasn't.
Stay away. Stay away from my gladiator. Do the hammerhead and the Sky Ray come in the same box?
It doesn't. It doesn't have fly. It's a hover vehicle.
Oh, there we go.
Vehicle smoke, Imperium gladiator. My bad. But things like
crisis suits, they have fly.
Yeah, crisis suits.
Yeah. No, there's plenty of nasty units with the fly keyword. You know, bikes, jet bikes, that kind of thing. That you
yeah,
would,
like
you would be quite happy to get
tanks, that kind of thing. You know, like there's lots of things in lots of armies. Mm-hmm. Even like jump intercessors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and definitely. Now, yeah. So do the hammerhead and the Sky Ray. Are they like one of those things that comes in the same kit? Could you buy a hammerhead box and build both and be able to run? You know, swap them out. And that kind of thing, because that would be really good if that was a case.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so the Hammerhead Sky is a dual kit with the Sky Ray.
Oh, amazing. Well, there we go. So I think I know what some of my future purchases or more recent purchases are going to be.
And I wonder whether, you know, if you're buying a Hammerhead and you get the Sky Ray turret, whether just buying, you know, two Hammerheads and two Devilfish is... Mm-hmm. I mean, they're not that. So they're 35 quid for a Devilfish and 42 quid for a Hammerhead. So yeah,
it's not much of a difference.
Save a couple of quid.
Yeah, potentially.
Assuming the turrets are completely separate. But yeah, knowing Games Workshop, there's probably like a shared turret ring or something.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
No, I'm not sure. I'd have to look at it. But yeah, and then, yeah, going back to leaders.
Leaders.
So yeah, so I've kind of got my twos, twos, and twos, and twos. So it made sense that I would have two leaders, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I went with, this is an interesting one because it's kind of like, I went with two Carder Fireblades.
Yeah, they're really good.
But they are the same points as an Ethereal.
Mm-hmm.
So I could do one Fireblade, one Ethereal, or I don't think I'd want to do two Ethereals, but...
No, so the Ethereal gives models in the unit a 5-up feel no pain, which is nice. And then
at the end of your command phase, on a 4-up, you get a CP as well.
Okay, so it's a command point farm. So you could do that twice if you had to.
Yeah, I think I'd like to have a Fireblade and an Ethereal.
Okay, because the Fireblades are cool.
They come with a rule called Volley Fire, which when they're leading a unit, add one to the attack's characteristics of range weapons.
On your breaches, so that's taking the breaches from two shots each to three shots each.
Yeah.
Which is, oh, that's lovely, isn't it? That's 30
especially
shots.
If he's giving them like lethal hits with the enhancement.
Amazing. That'd be so much fun.
And for 50 points as well.
Yeah, good value.
And you can give him a marker drone as well. so that when he's observing, he gives people ignores cover. But obviously, if he's doing that, then the unit he's leading can't then benefit from for the greater good themselves.
It's really good. Really, really good.
But yeah. But then I suppose like the Breach Fire Warrior squad leader, the Shazui, can have a marker drone themselves as well. So
Yeah, and all Guardian drones too. But the drone rules are quite interesting. There's some good potential options with them. But I really like the sound of that list. I think you could have a lot of fun playing with that.
Oh yeah. And I don't think it's like, so it's what, like 30 infantry.
Yeah.
32 infantry with the characters. Mm-hmm. 34 with the sniper.
Fire sights as well. Yeah.
So yeah, so kind of less than 40 infantry. You kind of throwing the drones in there as well. And then 2, 4, 6, 8 tanks.
Like, a lot of fun.
I think that's a lot of fun. It's quite a manageable force as well.
Yeah, you could get that painted up quick. I think that'd be really good to play. And the Breacher's rules are just so good, you know. Rerolling wounds against targets on an objective. There are some really nice stratagems in Monk-Car as well that can make that even better. Yeah, really good.
Yeah, tempting. But I've got a lot of projects on, Max. I've got a lot of projects.
Yeah. I don't. It's not something you'll get round to anytime soon, right?
But no. But you know, you never.
Maybe I can do it for you.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. And then you can play me with the army and destroy me, and I can kind of like cheer/cry at the monster that I've created.
Good stuff.
Right, so that's a little canter through the brand new kind of Tau Codex. As I say, we haven't really touched on the Kroot stuff. Hopefully we'll do that in a separate episode. But yeah, pick up the Kroot box if you want. I think it's really worth picking up, not just because it's got cool new Kroot models, and even if you're not a fan, obviously just sell those separately. But like, the Codex is gorgeous, isn't it?
It's one of the prettiest codexes I've seen, I think. I love it.
Yeah. I think this is my favourite battle box that they've done so far. It kind of comes, I'll post some pictures on Instagram as well, but like it comes all kind of wrapped up in like a little presentation pack, and you've got your cards in there, which are kind of like blue foil lined. They're really fancy, aren't they?
Yeah. And the artwork on the front and back of the codex. On the front, it's epic scene of the battle suits going to war. And then on the back, it's the Kroot letting rip. And yeah, it's awesome. I love it.
So yeah, as we said at the start, you know, massive thanks to Games Workshop for sending us a preview copy, and hopefully you guys can get hold of your own box on pre-release, which this episode will go out on the pre-release weekend, hopefully. So head over to Element Games using our affiliate link on our Instagram or X or Twitter, whatever you want to call it, and that gives us a little kickback as well, and doesn't cost you anything extra. And hope to see what kind of Kroot-y or otherwise army lists you guys create. Obviously, feel free to get hold of us on Instagram or something like that. Send us your kind of thoughts on the codex and what you like about it, what you would have liked to have seen that isn't in there, you know, mourning the loss of Long Strike, etc. And until next time, keep calm and crusade on.